Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Jonathan Moody. Jonathan Moody is a poet who teaches English at Pearland High School in Pearland, Texas. He lives in Fresno, Texas, with his wife and son. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you. Thank you, Lauren. Thanks for having me.
Can you begin by reading some poems?
Sure. The first poem I'll read is entitled Supersonic, and the premise behind it is I'm introducing my first girlfriend to my mom, but my first girlfriend is rap music, and she has a reputation that precedes her, being that I grew up in Florida, and Two Live Crew was, you know, making the airwaves, and, you know, they were banned. So, Supersonic. At Eglin Air Force Base, rumors about my first girlfriend traveled at the speed of sound. Some said she kept emergency parachutes in her purse because her hormones would tailspin. Others believed she was a crafty dope dealer who flew under the radar. On Beale Parkway, my mama's white diamond El Dorado became a sailplane sculpted by the Egyptian god of wind and air. Rushed to beat me home from school, only to catch footage of Tipper Gore branding a scarlet letter E for explicit across my girlfriend's breast. Yes, my teenage love bounced her booty like a subwoofer, but she knew more about Africa than my world history teacher. Is your girlfriend also the one who told you that blacks were the first people on earth? Yes, ma'am. I need to speak with her parents. She doesn't know who her real folks are. It's a toss-up between Bessie Smith and Charlie Parker, but she has more godfathers than the Zulu Nation. The next poem I'll read is entitled The Low-End Theory, and it's totally relevant because A Tribe Called Quest actually has a new album that's coming out. So I'm dedicating this poem in memory of Fife Dog, right? The Low-End Theory. The low-end theory needed tedious time and half like dough. My blank Memorex cassette feeding off a native tongue's classic, authentic as sweet potato cornbread. Tip and Fife, far from sucker MC, sifted rhythmic side dish of soulful sound, loaded with okra and onions, effortlessly without fail, as my boombox inflated copyright claims, high-speed dubbing sound, magnetically stripped, scooped with the crochet koofy. Bro, their infinite stardust talent. Tribe bundled a dented can of their career, its smudged expiration date, illegible. The low-end theory needed tedious time, effortlessly without fail, and half like dough as my boombox inflated copyright claims. My blank Memorex cassette, high-speed dubbing sound, feeding off a native tongue's classic, magnetically stripped, authentic as sweet potato cornbread, scooped with a crochet koofy. Bro, Tip and Fife, far from sucker MC, sifted their infinite stardust talent. Tribe bundled rhythmic side dish of soulful sound, the dented can of their career, loaded with okra and onions, its smudged expiration date, illegible. And the next poem I'll read is actually in the voice of Arsenio Hall. You know, back in the day, you know, rap, there was only a few platforms where you could, you know, see rappers being interviewed. And Arsenio Hall was like a beacon who, you know, took risk and invited people on the show. So he would have this thing that he would do before he cut the commercials where he would talk to his band and say, hey, give me some of that nasty funk. It was just like be like nonsense, nonsensical words. So this is in his voice, improvisational riff. Yo, Premier, give me a collard greens, chitlins, leftover meatloaf beat with plenty of Diana Ross Supreme ketchup wrapped in a buttermilk mothership that flew first class from North Cackalack to Cali, and some cinnamon soil fudge preheated to hot cone Fahrenheit. Yes, give me a breakbeat so nasty, it'll synchronize the monthly cycles of every B-girl in the world and catch Yosemite Sam and Bugs Bunny in a compromising position. Give me a beat filled with fault line funk, turning Rip Van Winkle into a rap insomniac. I want to hear those subwoofers, the thump thump, a telltale heartbeat that messes with Mel Gibson's conscience. I want a harmony so raw, it'll shut down Spike Lee's Knickerbocker trash talk, make Celtics fans eat a leprechaun's botanical boogers. Next poem I'll read is based on where I grew up, which is Fort Walton Beach, Florida, Okaloosa County to be exact. Okaloosa County. In Fort Walton Beach, Florida, Mama's house rattles from the aftermath of daisy cutters dropping on an Eglin Air Force Base test range. Her military retirement check can't cover the cost it takes to replace shattered windows. And you can catch the FDLE sex offender database turbocharging lies to boost the engine of tourism. At Mr. J's barbershop, the baby boomers could care less about voting, but sport star-spangled do-rags and take pride in Air Jordan's Olympic butter gold dunk, courtesy of Magic's no look behind the back cinnamon apple pie dish. The next poem I'll read is actually in the voice of a paper shredder. So I was thinking about our country and the relationships we used to have with former drug lords, mainly Manuel Noriega, and thinking about a paper shredder that's fed up of having to destroy documents that, you know, could implicate people in certain crimes. So this is Paper Shredding Blues. I'm tired of shredding incriminating evidence. The number of strips my owner carries to the dumpster should equal the number of years he'd face in prison. My mind bleeding green with names of military personnel and federal agents who have discussed drug shipment updates like the latest box scores. All those destroyed families, those burgeoning revolutions pacified. Another document force-fed into my mouth. I'm supposed to be fasting. I've already forgotten the names that grace the front because my working memory is an unpaid intern with little ambition. Can only consume so much. But this arrogant man believes I can keep pace. Why wouldn't he? My cross-cut shredder tears paper into bits the way stomach enzymes break down protein. Through all the confusion, he's convinced that sending drugs to Miami, New York City, Detroit, Chicago, Houston, LA, and DC is a necessary evil to help fund covert operations, to sedate the consciousness of inner-city youths and turning brother against brother. More proof corroborating his main point that greater police presence is required in the hood. My power cord is a tail longing to trip his secretary so hard that when she hits the floor face down, her purple pumps pop off and reveal gaping holes at the bottom of her stockings, gaping holes mirroring what our society sorely lacks, support.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Jonathan Moody, reading from his book, Olympic Butter Gold. So, those poems that are in sort of different voices,
yeah.
Do you find that that frees you up? As a poet, why choose to embody a different voice?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely frees me up because in a sense that it enables me to venture in territory that I probably wouldn't have the confidence to go. So, like the poem in Arsenio Hall's voice, if it's in my voice, it just sounds like a whole bunch of nonsense. But if I attach his name to it, people who are familiar with that have a frame of reference, and it adds a certain comedic value to it that wouldn't be there if it was just in my voice, definitely.
Yeah. And even with the copy machine?
Yes. Yeah. I feel like that would be interesting to kind of humanize an entity that is not human, mm-hmm. right? So if we think of like the role reversal where human beings are acting like machines, and here we have this machine that is conscious, trying to do the right thing, but really can't. And
right.
I feel like being stuck in that moment or that kind of tension adds a lot of value to the poem, as opposed if I were the one saying, hey, you know, I wish I could destroy these documents. But if we have a paper shredder, that puts us in a different world, right?
Definitely. Right, and it's interesting that you said it creates a tension.
Yes.
Right, so that's sort of an objective in your pieces.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, always.
Yeah. Would you say that that's a theme throughout the book, is to embody different voices?
Yes. So as far as the book, you know, I'm situating an imaginary hip hop Olympics, which is based on Chuck D's essay, where he said if there were a rap Olympics, he feels America wouldn't win he called it the brass, which he meant bronze. Because, you know, globally, other countries have studied hip hop as a culture and an art form and have surpassed America. And so I feel like in that sense, there's that tension already in the fact that we might not even win. And so my book is sort of an argument that is somewhat aligned with Chuck D's vision. I wanted to give people a sense of what that world would look like.
So a world in which we would win or not win?
I'll leave it up to the reader to decide if we win or not. But yeah, I wanted to create that tension, specifically the history of our country and its relationship to people who are part of hip-hop culture, right?
So, So obviously, you like to write about music.
Yes.
And it's interesting in the way that you do that because your poems have a lot of musicality in them.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
So would you say music is an obsession?
Oh, of course. It runs all throughout this book. And I think for me, and this was a question that was asked to me the other day, the fact that I'm obsessed with artists who may or may not be relevant today, do I think that would alienate audiences? And I don't think so, because we have all kind of resources for people to find out who these individuals are. So if somebody has no frame of reference for Arsenio Hall, all they have to do is just, you know, Google him online and they'll come up with all kinds of stuff.
So, right. And then the poem in and of itself does the work.
Definitely.
And should speak to the reader. So I think when you use pop culture, it should influence.
Right.
It can influence, but it doesn't necessarily have to dominate.
Exactly.
And then people are afraid then to use it because they're afraid of that, I think.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I think that you weave it so well that it's not doing that. It's not overtaking the poems.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And also, I noticed that you like to play with metaphor and personification.
Yes.
Is that something that you come up with in a revision stage or a drafting stage?
It depends on the poem. The Paper Shredding Blues one, I actually had that concept, that premise going in, so I wanted to extend the metaphor. But sometimes in lines, I feel like maybe this poem doesn't have imagery. And so in the revision stage, I'll go back and add a metaphor, because I'm always obsessed with trying to compare one thing to something else, trying to change our relationship to language and how we see the world, pretty much.
Yeah. Do you ever think, oh, this idea is a little too crazy?
Like, yeah, I'm always second guessing myself. Yeah, I'm like, this is too crazy. And then I read it, I'm like, oh, people are like, I wish I would have wrote that poem. Like, why did you read it? Like, now I had to go after you. I'm like, all right, thank you.
So, right. You have to take those risks.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even if you never show it to anybody.
Right.
Yeah. Can you read some more poems?
Yeah, sure. This next poem I'll read is in another voice. We talked about persona. It's actually in the voice of Fab Five Freddy, the former host of Yo MTV Raps. And he, in my mind, he is the commentator for this hip hop or rap Olympics. And so I had to get a poem in there in his voice. And this poem is entitled Olympic Buttergold Havana Cuba Interlude. And we talked about tension earlier, thinking about the relationship our country has to Cuba. I wanted to find out if there were any Cuban MCs who could give any one of our MCs a run for our money. And I found out about a woman named Tamari who's doing amazing work. And she's mentioned here in the poem. Representing Cuba in the freestyle battle event is Tamari, who cuts down her opponents like sugar cane. The phrase cake of owl, spray painted in white bubble letters across her orange head wrap, could be a jab against misogynistic mic fiends who believe female MCs should keep their feminist salt and pepper spice hidden in the pantry. Could be an implicit diss against President Obama's camp. Some say if America wins the gold, it would be epic poetic justice if Assata Shakur suddenly appeared in the camera's field of view and stood behind the medalist at the precise moment the picture is snapped. There's a phenomenal moment that happens. I was researching Tamari, and she has this video called Cake of Vow, and she's in a relationship with a guy who just refuses to do anything around the house or pick up after himself because he's addicted to video games. Well, there's a part in the video where the video becomes a video game, and her boyfriend gets trapped inside the video game, and Tamari is holding the controllers So in this video game, she's able to get her boyfriend to do stuff that he refuses to do around the house, like pick up after himself and wash dishes. Yeah, that's awesome, right? I'll read another poem. It has a different tone to it, called Pentada. And this is a sad story, but it needs to be told. I wanted to change the narrative about Colombia, because in rap music, the only reference you get from Colombia is drugs or Pablo Escobar, right? So I was doing research about, you know, who, like, about the graffiti scene in Colombia. And this name, Diego Felipe Becerra, kept popping up. And this is a kid who was killed by a police officer, 16 years old. The police officer said that he felt threatened, but the autopsy report shows that Diego was shot in the back at close range, which says that he was trying to run away. So this story, this poem is dedicated to him. It's called Pintada. You were a feline without whiskers, unable to sense danger approaching. Your spray paint gave Felix the cat life the moment a cop snuffed yours. Now in Bogota, liberal guilt sanctions street art as long as cats bomb graffiti that attracts tourists like mice. The mayor, pulling artistic integrity apart like string cheese, tries keeping pintadas from popping up in undesignated zones, so the memory of your foul death remains buried in litter boxes. Diego, before your spirit escaped from your body like mist from a can, Bogota's buildings were seen as furniture and graffiti unnecessary scratch marks. If only the cop knew your incessant clawing stemmed from the biological need to stay sharp. Weird story surrounding that poem. I think maybe a few days later, or maybe like a month after, Justin Bieber does a concert in Colombia, and he has a police escort taking him to a place where he spray paints graffiti, and the community got really upset. They're like, how are you going to allow Justin Bieber to come in and you guys kill one of our own? So it didn't make any sense. And if memory serves correctly, he spray painted Free Lil Boosie, which is a rapper who went to jail for killing somebody. Like, and he, I think he admitted in one of his raps, like that's how he got caught. So, which is crazy. Let's see. Another poem I'll read would be Houston. Houston, where cookies and cream custom painted Impalas sit on full moon inch rims, where DJ Screw transformed tongue twisting lyrics into slurred, 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 so so lilla, quick, quick, queeze, that moop, 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 move, move, so slower, slower, then the elixir of purple drink poured into styrofoam, where the disturbing air of menace hitchhikes across tollways, where brothers be squeezed lime steady on the grind, where drop-top aggression lowers property value, where the exposed flesh of downtown buildings are tinted red from sunburn, where the ghost of Enron audits business ethics classes, where the press media blacked out the gospel of desegregated lunch counters, where allergy forecasts report high levels of ragweed rebellion, where pigeons toss bread crust to politicians, where rain is an estranged mother, where cats clock relief pitcher speed on interstates, where cops claim they come in peace when descending into residential war zones, where hot sauce enjoys being the life of the party, where local rap stars refuse to explode and become supernova sellouts. And then this poem I'll read is based on a true story that happened in the classroom. I'm the kind of teacher, I don't like to see any of my students bored. So when they are, I just change the lesson on the fly, just improvise. This poem is entitled Dear Tupac. Dear Tupac, I begin with Byron and Tennyson and watch my students bury their heads on desks. They rest easier than the deceased. Dear Tupac, it's me against the world of indifference. I display your photo on the projector, your arms tatted up, your iced out diamond death row pendant glaring against the black backdrop like the tunnel of light we supposedly see before we die. I read your work out loud. Soon all eyes are on me, then on you, the resilient rose that grew from concrete. Dear Tupac, this generation that needs Ritalin and iPods to focus holds their ears of glass against your poems and eavesdrops. Dear Tupac, Daniel, the young blood chilling in the back, cracks open my copy of your book. He admires the page the way he admires his cool gray Jordans. Dear Tupac, Daniel, who yesterday refused to copy notes on enjambment and in-stop lines, handwrites your longest word poem word for word. Daniel, who's always the first to beg if he can dip out early, begs me to kick knowledge on where he can cop your book. Dear Tupac, you real cool. Not because you died soon. Not because you thin gin with juice. Because you've transformed apathetic adolescents into military-minded soldiers, ready to unlock their imaginations off safety.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Jonathan Moody, reading from Olympic Butter Gold. So, how would you say, Jonathan, that research influences your work?
A lot. There is certain poems where I wanted to make sure that not only did I get the names right, but as far as, you know, attributing certain characteristics to these individuals, and even books, you know, as far as like the history of hip hop, figuring out the socio-political factors that shaped it, I wanted to make sure that I included those elements in there. So like when I make a reference to Agent Orange, that is very real as far as the history of trying, you know, New York City trying to get rid of the graffiti and the devastating impact that it had on some of the poor residents in the Bronx. Or even if it's making sure that I have the timeline right, where I'm talking about, you know, listening to rap music when I was in Germany, when my parents were in the military, and making sure that at that time, there were indeed acts who were traveling abroad overseas during that time to spread hip hop. So yeah, research went into a lot. One of the main books that I was my go-to book was Trisha Rose's Black Noise, which was her dissertation when she was a student at Yale. There's a lot of information in that book that really opened my eyes to some of the factors that shaped hip hop culture.
So in that respect, then, does it take you a long time to craft a poem? Are you going back and forth a lot to do these checks?
Yeah, some of these poems took, you know, months to write. Dear Tupac was one that I actually wrote in one sitting because it was based on like something that actually happened. It just took me a minute to get the wording down.
And that's an interesting poem too, because there's a lot of like subtle allusions to Tupac and his book and his work, and then even other poets. You're playing with sort of the way they make language.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah. And that's all subtle. Which also you have this subtle quality with humor.
Yeah.
Which is really great. Yeah. How do you do that?
I don't think of myself as a funny person, but if you give me the time to sit down and write it out, it comes across. So you guys were laughing, which is a huge compliment to me, because I think it's funny and it's great when other people think it's funny too. I think I have a dry sense of humor, which works. And I think that's cool. Maybe my high school students don't quite get it. So maybe it's more adult humor, but yeah.
And some of it comes through in the references to pop culture, definitely. Like just knowing what you're talking about, remembering growing up and being immersed in these things too.
Oh, yes.
But then sort of the Houston poem has a little bit more of a somber tone.
Yeah.
And it has this great anaphora and alliteration going on.
Yeah.
So how do you feel like that works juxtaposed to the other poems?
I think it adds a little bit of edginess to it. I mean, humor can be edgy too.
Right.
But I feel like being able to change the moods in the way that a DJ is able to change the soundscape is very important in poetry as well. And I think that's an important element to have, so that not to just have a bunch of funny poems, but to also have, you know, a serious poem too. August Wilson, you know, he's like, use comedy, and then once you've got the crowd laughing, then sneak the truth in. And I think that's a philosophy that I try to, you know, stick to or adhere to in my work, definitely.
Can you read some more poems?
Sure, definitely. This next poem I'll read, again, something that actually happened in the class. I had, I invited a military recruiter from the Marines to speak to my students. And this was when I used to teach Stuhl Credit, you know, about the art of persuasion. And we were trying to anticipate what he was going to do. But I didn't expect this to happen. This poem is called Regulate. And it's an epigraph from the military recruiter. That guy's a rapper. I don't know why he's on this slide. The staff sergeant speaking to my students has my homie Nate Dogg hemmed up in a garbage PowerPoint. Fails to recognize he held it down for the Marines. A munitions specialist whose soulful singing had more swerve than a cruise missile. Long Beach legend, 3 years departed, enlisted in the Corps to become a man who'd command respect, but gets dissed by one of his own. Laid back like a G-funk track, I point at the glossy brochure of Brotherhood containing massive propaganda and challenge the staff sergeant's strongest recruit to fold it into thirds. So I got highly upset, but I'm one of those individuals where I suppress my rage and I low key on a passive aggressive tip, call people out on it. So he's showing my students this PowerPoint, and there's a picture of Nate Dogg in a bandana, and he's just like, oh, that guy's a rapper. I don't know why he's in there. Instead of just going out and doing the research saying, hey, who is this guy? You know, why is he in the slide? He just automatically assumed that just because he's a black male with a bandana that he doesn't belong. So as he said that, I'm actually on the computer doing research. And I'm like, hey, I pulled him aside. I'm like, hey, Nate Dogg was a munitions specialist. He had arguably the most important job. He kept inventory of the weapons. How many weapons came in? How many went out? And he was like, oh, really? I'm like, yeah. So, and then I was like, I had to write this poem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his last name was Slaughter. I can't make that up. Staff Sergeant Slaughter. I can't make it up. Who's no longer a recruit, by the way. I don't know. Maybe why, but. let's see. I'll do another poem. Let's see. This is actually the opening poem of the book, and it's the opening ceremony of My Hip Hop Olympics, entitled Chasing the American Dream. Every time I hold my rusty spoon above the Statue of Liberty's torch, I struggle to find a vein. Another poem I'll read is, let's see, B-Boy Manifesto. When the heart skips breakbeats, B-boys don't dance around the turntable of commitment.
The poetry of Jonathan Moody. Thank you so much for being here, Jonathan.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.